down the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
And good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 98 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Thank you. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 10th, 2008. So if you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday, which is January the 10th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and speak to myself and the guest I'll be introducing shortly. If you are not listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday evening, you're listening to one of our archive streams, and nonetheless, you are welcome, and thank you for joining us. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do attempt to check the emails during the breaks. When we take a break, Bob would say. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find the links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active, and you'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming there and all of the other hosts. I'm only a small part of the Head On Radio Network. There are links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music on the show. I am so glad to be back this evening. I've been missing in action for a few days. It's a long story, and I'll tell you about it later in the show, but first things first, I'd like to introduce our guest, Shara Greer. Now, Shara has actually been on the show before. Shara was on the show in July, and if you'd like to hear that original interview, just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the July calendar. She's in the July 24th box there, and you'll find the archive. We went into great detail about the services and functioning of Service Members Legal Defense Network. Tonight, Shara is going to give us an update regarding what's going on in the news lately. You know, we've had just recently Darren Manzella, who was on 60 Minutes about 3 weeks ago. It's caused quite a stir in the media. The media is finally recognizing that LGBT, the mainstream media, that is, that perhaps we exist. If you haven't seen that video, there's also a link there in today's Strictly Confidential calendar. Now, Shara joined SLDN in 2001 as the Director of Law and Policy. She manages SLDN's legal services, which includes lobbying and watchdog grassroots programs. She is regarded as the nation's, or at least one of the nation's, leading experts on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and has appeared on CNN, National Public Radio, and others. Her list of credentials is longer than my arm. And Shara, welcome to the show. And Shara, welcome to the show. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Excellent, excellent. I'm just checking levels here. So you can hear me fine then, right?
Yes, I can.
Excellent, excellent. Your volume is a little bit low, but the studio can adjust that. Shara, it's so nice of you to join us this evening with such short notice, and we appreciate it. Shara, it seems like the bottom is falling out of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell militia. It looks like we're getting coverage all over the place, and you're being quoted left and right, SLDN, that is. What's going on?
Well, I think, you know, this is a really, and yet another ongoing event. And Darren's story has brought to light what's going on for the last 2 years, where more and more we're seeing service members being open and out in their units and not being discharged.
I see. And what is interesting about this is Darren actually has reported to his commanders and, in fact, presented a videotape of himself and his boyfriend. And there seems to be such a lack of interest. And apparently this is not confined to Darren. Is the military as a whole trying to send Congress a big message?
I'm not sure if I can speak at it being the military as a whole, but I think a lot of commanders are seeing that keeping good troops is much more important than kicking someone out under don't ask, don't tell. And Darren's case is not, you know, there are other Darrens out there. I mean, Darren is remarkable in that he was willing to come forward and talk about this. A lot of service members out there who have either been found out or talked their commands about their sexual orientation and are still serving, you know, don't want to come forward because that would risk potentially being kicked out at that point. But we know of numerous cases where individuals have been outed to their commands or one way or another have decided to come forward and talk about their sexual orientation with their commands. And rather than discharge them, they keep them and they deploy with their units. Which is what happened with Darren. And Darren was in a circumstance where he was getting harassing emails and being told he was under investigation, which led him to decide to be proactive as opposed to waiting to be outed.
Well, Shara, in that 60 Minutes news piece that aired about 3 weeks ago, in addition to Darren Manzella, there were four, maybe five other LGBT folks who were on the program. And one of them indicated that he was fairly out in his unit and that everyone knew about him. However, he had to switch somehow to the Marines. Apparently, I'm not sure exactly what the scenario was that would cause that, but that he had to go back in the closet again. Do we find that the Marine Corps is the most homophobic?
You know, it really has much more to do with command than with, you know, service. Actually, on that piece, one of the service members, Brian Frickney, is a Marine, and he, when he was serving, was out to his unit and served without problems while deployed. So the circumstance I think you're describing is the service member, David Santos, who appeared in this piece, who described that, you know, when he was with his home-based unit, he was fairly open, but when he deployed and was with a different unit serving as an on-the-ground Arabic translator, that in that circumstance he felt less comfortable. And we do hear that. It is not that every unit is open and welcoming, and it's not that there still aren't people who make anti-gay comments, but we are simply seeing it sort of being less and less, and certainly when someone is known to be gay and is part of the unit, you know, we're seeing a higher level of acceptance.
Well, Shara, according to the information I'm reading regarding SLDN, that you are aware of at this point in time about 500 openly gay troops, one wonders if this number has been escalating since Don't Ask, Don't Tell began to be discussed in the media regarding removing it. We have had a sort of a background discussion about this for quite a while. Have these numbers peaked because of this discussion?
I don't know if it's because of this discussion or if it's simply because of the sea change both within society and within the military. I mean, gay people have always been in the military. I think we're just seeing more and more people willing to, and really unable to be closeted and willing to be open, and more of their peers and leaders caring much more about their capabilities than about their sexual orientation. And at least from what we see from the service members that we talk to, and we talk to hundreds and hundreds of service members every year, you know, that definitely seems to be a growing trend. The difference in the last 5 years from the people we talk to is remarkable.
Well, Shara, one wonders, with the about 12,000 troops that have already been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I'm wondering, comparing this to other countries who have accepted LGBT people openly in the service, for instance, Spain, England, and a list of others, are what, 15 countries now? I've forgotten how many. But in these countries, did they retroactively address the fact that they had been kicking out LGBT folks and perhaps change their discharge status if it was unfavorable, et cetera? And have you heard talk about that in the United States?
I have not heard talk about that in the United States. I know in the United Kingdom they did attempt to assist and compensate some of the service members who have been discharged harshly under their prior law. You know, here in the United States, we're still trying to get rid of the law that, you know, if you follow it strictly, means that you should be kicked out if you're known to be gay. So anything beyond that is, I think, a little premature.
Well, looking at, well, for instance, the comments of Duncan Hunter, he implies that the other nations that are allowing LGBT folks to serve are actually, their militaries are only serving in, I think, what he would call as being light duty. I think he's implying that they are a bunch of sissies, I think is pretty much what it comes down to if we were to use his language. Of the 500 people that you're aware of, what sort of military positions do they hold?
Of the people that we have talked to, I mean, they hold all sorts of positions, from, you know, special forces to linguists to healthcare providers to, you know, supply technicians to pilots. I mean, there's not, you know, gay and lesbian troops are in every military occupational specialty that there is. And to imply that the other militaries around the world are somehow less effective or efficient, I think it's fairly insulting to our allies, as the British Admiral, who also appeared on 60 Minutes, sort of noted. But also ironic in that in 93, when Duncan Hunter, among others, were pushing to keep gays and lesbians out of the military, they pointed to the United Kingdom as an example as to why we had to keep the policy. So it's mystifying to me as to why in 1993, it was a perfect parallel, and somehow now the British military is no longer a good example.
Sure. Is Darren currently waiting for the other shoe to drop? Is he concerned that there's still going to be something that comes down the pike over this because he's been so open about it? What is his mental situation? And what's going on with him right now?
Darren is back in Texas now. He's currently on leave. He'll be reporting back to work in about 2 weeks. And, you know, he knows very well that, you know, he may now be separated. You know, he knew when he decided to do the 60 Minutes piece that that might be the consequence of his action. And again, I just want to say how courageous that is, because he's made this decision, and he said this publicly, I mean, he made this decision because he felt that he had an opportunity to speak for all of the thousands of service members in his situation who couldn't. And he, you know, he knows that that may mean that he's no longer going to be in the army.
Sure, I'm also wondering regarding his status and the status of all of them. Surely you must deal with a lot of people out of 500 people who have children who they've left here in the United States. And can you help us to understand what the effects of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, how that affects families with children?
It's, you know, Don't Ask, Don't Tell is very difficult for gay and lesbian service members who have children and dependents and who want to form families. You know, for every service member, being separated from your children and your family is incredibly difficult. For gay and lesbian service members, you know, their partners have no power to exist. So the military won't notify them if they're injured, except after people that are required to notify, if then, you know, they are non-entities as far as the military is concerned. They're legal strangers. Service members' children, that gets much more complicated. If they're legally their children, i.e. they gave birth to them, or they've legally adopted them, or they're, you know, they're a former opposite sex spouses or partners, product of that relationship. You know, then their children are treated the same as other service member children are. They are entitled to benefits and other kinds of protections and support that the military provides to the military dependents. But for the enlisted service members, this is very hard. I mean, I'll give you a specific example. If you are, in a relationship and you want to adopt your partner's children, or you want to together jointly adopt a child, that becomes very, very difficult for a gay or lesbian service member because that adoption, that record of you and another same-sex person adopting a child can be used to get you kicked out of the military. And indeed, what we often see is, tragically, many service members have to make a choice of, are they going to build families with children, or are they going to stay in the military? And we've seen several instances where people have left the military because they wanted to be able to have those kinds of legal relationships with their children and their partners.
That's an astounding level of complication in the things that LGBT folks have to put up with. They're fighting for our country, in the sense that, excluding the whole George Bush and legality of the war situation, they are, in their terms, fighting for our rights. But by the same token, they're denied rights here at home. And I understand, too, that on bases, that many are afraid to take their small children to some of the base functions, like the Santa Claus and, skating parties and all the things that kids do, for fear that the small child, will say something about my other mommy or I have two daddies.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely a risk, which, isolates them and their children even more from, the communities that the military provides. I mean, service members, if they want to be really careful, keep their entire personal life secret and hidden, and sometimes will even create alternative stories in order to protect their career, which is very, very difficult for many people. And more people just won't do it. And need to be whole people to be able to effectively serve their country, our country.
Well, that is a very important thing. Shara, there's something, an organization that actually has been flying under my radar. I have not reported on this organization in the past, although we've talked about so many, American Family Association, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this group called Center for Military Readiness, and this woman named Elaine Donnelly, who are they and what's up with these people? How big is the organization? And could you tell us a story about that? I'm afraid I don't know much about it.
Elaine Donnelly and her Center for Military Readiness is a fairly small organization. It's Elaine Donnelly. She also has an executive director based here in D.C. They have been around for some time. Her mission and her funding is to keep gays and lesbians out of the military and also to significantly restrict the role of women in the military. And that is the singular mission of that, or the twin missions of that organization.
Well, is she a branch of some other large Republican organization? So many times they seem to be so inbred, like the leader of this one is the husband of that one and from another organization. And what is her link up?
She's recently allied with a lot of the other conservative organizations. As far as I'm aware, there are no sort of official links or she's not married to anyone affiliated with the other organization. She is certainly very connected. She and Duncan Hunter have worked together for quite some time, and he's been quite supportive of her work. And she was appointed to the Defense Department's Commission on Women at one point in time under the prior Bush administration. So she does have those kinds of connections. And she's been a spokesperson on this issue for a number of years. What I find really interesting is, at this point in time, she is about the only spokesperson that will speak sort of don't ask, don't tell. There are really only her and one other individual who was affiliated with Focus on the Family who will stand up and speak in support of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Well, that's very encouraging news. Cheryl, there's a phrase that stuck in my mind that one of our guests said, and but darn if I can remember who, and so I'm going to ask you if you were the person who said this, that in history that no country has ever approved of gay marriage or legalized marriage for LGBT folks until their LGBT folks were able to serve in the military. Was it you that told us that?
It well could be. That is something I am likely to have said, and it's true. Every country that has formal recognition of gay and lesbian relationships, their military policy changed first.
Well, that was very interesting to me. It seems that you know, there would be more of these Focus on the Family groups and what have you agitating against LGBT people serving openly. Were they aware of that fact? It was a striking fact to me. I had never conceived of that before, and I'm glad you shared that with us. I feel it was you. There were just a couple of people we've had on who've talked about this, and the fellow I talked to said that he didn't say that. So I'm fairly sure it must have been you. That was interesting information. Cheryl, in talking with people, and I take it that the organization also does lobbying. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what are you hearing from the senators on both sides of the aisle, the representatives and the senators? Is everyone pretty much getting over this whole don't ask, don't tell thing, like the military seems to be?
It, you know, like most things in Congress, it moves a little slowly. We are very excited to see the momentum that has been building. There was legislation introduced one Congress ago, and again in this Congress in the House, legislation called the Military Race Enhancement Act, which would get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and put in its place the policy of non-discrimination. And 3 years is a pretty short time for legislation to be in the House. And it already has close to 140 co-sponsors and is starting to be talked about a great deal more. So the support is certainly building. And the Senate side, we're hopeful there'll be legislation in the next few months. And we've certainly seen interesting people asking tough questions about this policy on the Senate side, most notably Senator Collins, Republican senator from Maine, who is on the Senate Armed Services Committee. She asked questions of the incoming chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Moore, and asked him directly, you know, is it time to change this? You know, hasn't its time come? And his response was interesting because he was asked point blank, did he think the law should change? And he did say no. So let's be clear, the military is not jumping up and down saying to change it. But very different from even 5 years ago, his response was also, this is Congress's law. And if Congress wants to change it, they can change it. And if we wanted to have a debate about it, we should have a debate about it. Which is a very different response than we have seen from the Pentagon in the past. And very different, certainly, from his predecessor, General Pace.
It seems to me, Cheryl, that the whole don't ask, don't tell policy has become a metaphor for the right regarding our existence in the country. It seems that they would much prefer it if we would shut up and go back in the closet. The whole don't ask, don't tell thing, I think, is very appealing to them. Now, what I've heard is that we don't have a chance for ENDA in 2008 and that very likely there'll be no Matthew Shepard hate crimes legislation in 2008. Do you think the don't ask, don't tell will come up in 08, or do we have to wait to get rid of Bush?
Realistically, I think we have to wait for the new president and the new Congress. I think that realistically, I mean, anything can happen, but I think realistically we're looking at the next Congress for significant legislative change.
I would have to agree with you. It seems that everything is completely stagnant and nothing advances while this this cadre is in power. Shara, what would you say to us? I've asked you a series of questions. What would you say to us, things that I've missed regarding what's going on recently? I'm interested to hear just what's up with you and the organization that I wouldn't know to ask.
I would just sort of reemphasize the, you know, sort of the very hopeful sea change that we're seeing. And I know we talked about this before, but it's just so remarkable that, you know, beginning last year, we had General Shalakashvili, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who was responsible for implementing Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the Clinton administration, you know, change his mind and say that it was time, you know, to allow gay lesbians to serve. Later this year, actually just in November, 28 generals and admirals followed his lead and came out with a joint statement to Congress and the public saying that they too believe that it was time to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and allow gays and lesbians to serve in the military. So we're seeing from the brass down to the rank and file just this growing recognition that this policy does not make sense. It doesn't make sense for the military. It doesn't make sense for our country. And I think it's also important that these are patriotic people, as you mentioned, who are putting their lives on the line to defend our country. And to treat them disrespectfully and unfairly is so tragically insulting to those who are willing to serve that I think people are beginning to understand that the time has come. And this is an anachronism, and it needs to go.
Well, that it certainly is. Shara, I very much appreciate your joining us this evening. You had were only able to join us for a short while, and probably we have covered this. And again, I want to remind folks that if you'd like to hear the more extensive interview with Shara and the more details about service members' legal defense, go to the July calendar at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Shara, how can the listeners support SLDN?
They can do several things. One very important thing is coming up on March 6th and 7th, we are having our annual lobby days where we have people from all over the country go up to Capitol Hill and tell members of Congress how important it is to get rid of this law. That's very important, and even if, you know, legislation doesn't move this year, it's important for members of Congress to hear from their constituents and to lay the groundwork to finally get this done. So if you can make it to D.C., that is a fantastic way to help us out. You can't make it to D.C., you can also go to our webpage, www.sldn.org, and we have a way there for you to be able to write your congressman and congresswoman and senators and tell them that it's just an important issue to you and you want them to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You can certainly always make donations. We do appreciate it. You know, we, in addition to our lobbying, serve, you know, hundreds of service members every year, free of charge, and supporting that work, you know, makes it possible for us to represent people like Darren and the other hundreds of service members that we represent at any given point in time. So those are a few ways that people out there can help.
Well, sure, that's good to know. And we've been posting your website in the chat room, but thank you for bringing that out to the listeners who are not in chat. And again, that's SLDN.org, right?
SLDN.org.
Okay. Sharon, I appreciate your being on the show. You've been an excellent guest. And again, I'd like to say to you that please consider this show an ally. And if there's anything you'd like to get out or any information, just pick up the phone and call. You don't need to be a scheduled guest. We'd be glad to have you on.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate you inviting me on.
And thank you. And everyone, that's Shara Greer. And thank you, Shara. And Shara joined us from Service Members Legal Defense Network. And she's a very interesting woman. She the Service Members Legal Defense Network is a site you really should stop by. There's lots of information there that you just can't. It's hard to understand. There's so many obstacles and things that you have to know. You have to be prepared. You have to be psychologically prepared to be LGBT and what to say in this situation and what to say in that situation and how to handle this issue how to handle that issue, how to handle your mail, the whole bit. There's 1,000 things you need to know not to get kicked out over Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All of those are detailed over at the Service Members Legal Defense Network. And I'm going to tell you a little story. In fact, this story was sent in by one of our news ninjas, Gene, just prior to this, the show. And Gene, it's appreciated. It's a story about a couple of children and how they are affected by Don't Ask, Don't Tell. William is 5, and Ryan is 3 years old. And they are the children of a U.S. Army officer. Her name is Cheryl Parker. Now, she is a decorated U.S. Army officer. The children, like the children of service members everywhere, they've dealt with cross-country moves. They've dealt with months without their mom while she was deployed in Iraq. But unlike heterosexual couples with children, they have to forego basically all of the benefits and conveniences and the support services that are offered to military families. You see, for them to take advantage of any of those support services or conveniences, et cetera, they would risk revealing that they have another mother, which is Donna Lewis. It could lead to Parker's dismissal. Even though they're from Massachusetts, of course, the LGBT Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a national law. That wouldn't protect them. You see, Army bases are very close-knit communities. There's a very, very strong chance that when you have young children, they're going to inadvertently out their mothers or their two fathers. Cheryl remarks that when she tried to put William in an on base daycare, he would talk about having two moms. And, you know, a lot of daycare workers are spouses of military personnel, and you see, she doesn't need anybody, somebody's wife going home and saying, what's the deal, you know, with William Parker? How does he have two moms? That sort of thing. And the same thing applies to other activities that we're discussing with Cheryl, like they have kiddie gym class and, you know, the questions start, and you have to basically tell your children to lie, and it's just too complicated. And how does a child grasp that? Now, in this particular case, Cheryl and Donna, they are adamant that they are not going to tell their children to lie to protect the family. And, of course, Cheryl depends upon the income to support the family, but they just cannot bring themselves to tell their children to lie. They can't take them to the commissary together anymore, both kids at the same time. Or, you know, one of the kids will say, Mom, no, not you, the other mom. And, you know, we can't tell them, or they're saying we can't tell them not to say that because the kid's going to ask why, and it's just not a good idea to put children in this kind of a situation. This, of course, extends to playground situations. There's a wonderful playground on the base, and the child named William absolutely loved it, but there are lots of kids around. So they could only go when there were very few kids there because they would risk the kids saying, that's my mom and my other mom's at home. Now, this is an innocent thing. This is what children do. They introduce themselves to each other, and they tell a little about themselves. It's, you know, a sense of wonderment. This is how life begins. You know, the kid, William, is dying to play soccer, and they have on-base teams for younger kids. They cannot do that. William can't go to the swimming pool. He can't go to movie day, and he just can't go to anything the other kids are allowed to do because of the risk that this unreasonable and idiotic law places in the family. Holidays are very, very hard. There are Thanksgiving functions, and all the other officers get to bring their spouses and their kids, and the children run amok, and there's a big banquet area. But they can't take their kids to that. It could cost her job. You know, there are kids' holidays parties. We talked about the Santa, and they give out a gift to each Santa. And the couple decided, you know, it's just not worth it. We'll take them to the mall to see Santa if we have to. And then there's another alternative. It's an off-base organization that's called Santa Delivers, and, you know, you give the gift to them and in advance, and they bring the kid, you know, bring the gift dressed up like Santa Claus. But in order for Santa to do that, they had to, like, clean the house. They had to take, you know, clean the house. They had to take the pictures down. And, you see, because there's a risk that Santa might be Colonel So-and-so or Colonel So-and-so's retired brother or whatever, and he's going to say that he went on base and delivered a Christmas present to these kids, and there were pictures of two women all over the, you know, sitting on the piano or sitting on the mantle, you know, with their arms around each other, and are in any number, there's any number of ways. I have to tell you a little story. Approximately 300 years ago, this is when dinosaurs roamed the earth. I was a TV repairman. I don't know how many, if I've said this before. It's a long, long time ago. But I remember when I was doing that, I did service calls for a company in Tallahassee. And, you know, I had the uniform and the Florida TV written on the back, the whole bit. But in any case, there was a home I went to, and I walked in the front door, and it was perfectly clear to me it was a lesbian couple. And the television set was in a bedroom, and I went into the bedroom to look at the television set and figure out what was going on with it. And it was very obvious to me that, you know, there was a little bit of dust on the dresser. You could see where a picture frame probably was. And they had cleaned that house, and they carefully told me that this is her bedroom, and you know it was just awkward. And of course, I didn't even pretend that I realized what was going on. They probably figured I was gay, you know. But the thing is that, you know, hiding takes its toll. It really does take its toll. So anyway, they can't even live on base. They could get free housing on base, but you see, there'd be more neighbors, there'd be more questions, there would be a constant presence in notes and, you know, talking about mom. See, there are financial benefits to living on base. You know, you don't have the same kind of traffic. You have the medical clinic, there's the commissary, the PX. It's all very convenient. It's all very close by. But they dare not take advantage of that. So instead of spending time on the base, the family often goes to the local malls, and they live in an off-base apartment, and you know, but the base, the worries don't just end at the base gate. You know, you could go to a carnival or any sort of a kid's function, you know, Chuck E. Cheese, whatever, and someone in there is a, you know, the wife of the colonel or the husband of the major, any number of scenarios. So as their kids grow older, they're going to miss out on more and more. They're not able to take care of, even go to the military school. There are schools there, you know, the elementary schools, which actually are, those schools are actually much safer than public schools. You know, disciplinary problems are taken care of quickly, and there's none of this. Basically, it's like sending your kid to a private school, but for free. But they dare not take advantage of that. The same's true for the base's teen center. I mean, this goes on and on. Nobody gets how deeply this stuff affects people's lives, and it's just not fair. Nobody expects us to have the rest of the picture, to be actually connected to anybody. We're just, you know, single lone wolves preying on children as far as they're concerned, and it's really getting kind of old, which is particularly what this particular program is for, is to present LGBT folks the way they actually are. Television's not going to do it. Movies damn sure not going to do it. So I could go on and tell you other stories regarding guardianships and how they had to arrange things and custodial child, the fact that her partner, who is home with the two children, cannot make medical decisions, that she can take them to the hospital, and if one of them has an arm cut off, but they won't let her pass the front desk because she has no legal custody. You know, it's just amazing. So they, you know, one of the kids was ill, had an accident, and they had to take him to a hospital off base. It would have been free on base, but they had to pay $1,500 to an emergency room. And that's, of course, as we know with the medical costs today, that's a minor figure. But still, $1,500 was $1,500 she could have spent on the kids or the family. So she says, and I quote, "How do I fight for the rights of others when mine are so restricted? They're taking convicted felons into the military, but I'm beneath a convicted felon, and because of that, my children suffer." And people ask, well, why don't you just quit? Why don't you get a job where it wouldn't matter? And her answer is, I've known since I was probably 5 years old I was a lesbian. And I've known since I was probably 10 years old that I wanted to be in the military. This is a lifelong dream. This is what I want to do. This is my heart regarding the future. And she's refusing to let them take away her dream, and I damn well don't blame her. So that's what it's like, folks, to live as an LGBT folks person when your partner is on base, and surely men are in this same situation when your partner is on base. And Duncan Hunter having the nerve to say that, oh yeah, the foreign militaries that let LGBT people serve, well, you know, they're just light duty. They just go in and supervise. We're rough and tough. We're the big tough guys. Can't have them here. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Let's see, where was it? I was going to tell you the story of what happened to me earlier. Oh, you have to laugh. Beautiful, really. Last Saturday, I bent slightly to pick up a pillowcase. Now, the pillowcase wasn't on the floor. The pillowcase was actually the bed. And I actually bent just a little bit the wrong way, and my back went out. Oh, Lord have mercy. My lower back killed me for days. In fact, today's the first day I've really been moving around freely. In any case, a couple of days after that, I could lie down or I could stand as long as I was bent a little bit, but I couldn't sit, so there's no way I could sit and do this show. That was Monday. And then by Tuesday, the time Tuesday rolled around, I had a cold, so whenever I would cough, well, if you can just imagine how comical it is, a guy trying to cough with his back hurting, it was a nightmare. It was a total nightmare. I am so glad to be back. I am so very glad to be back. And we have some interesting stuff coming up later in the second hour. We're actually going to go on a field trip, and that ought to be interesting. I'm looking forward to that. And we have some music I'm going to run this hour. I've been trying to run this for about a week or so now, and it's a remix track by our friend Glenn Rivera, and I hope you enjoy it. It's called American Hearts by Billy Ocean. another surprising and excellent remix by our friend Glenn Rivera. As Glenn explained to me back in the day, Billy Ocean tracks were most likely, and generally speaking, overplayed on radio and dance clubs. But apparently this particular track did not get that much play, but it's a wonderful track. And we're going to go on a field trip later in the bottom of the hour. We're going to go on a field trip. The thing is that you hear these tracks, but you never hear them in context. You never hear them in context with the track before it or the track after it or the mix in and the mix out. It's a lot of difference. And today we're, in fact, the bottom of the hour, we're going to go to a real live gay bar, the one that's across the street. You know, we haven't visited the gay bar across the street in quite a while. At the beginning of the show, a few months back, we used to hear music coming in and out of the folks that opened the door. But we're actually going to take a field trip over there later in the evening and hear some mixed sets. And the chat room has been having a discussion about backs. Easy it is to throw one out, and yes, I completely agree. In fact, I was talking to my brother-in-law the other day, and apparently he put his back out of commission by picking up a garbage bag. One of those thin garbage bags that weighs practically nothing, and it was empty, and his back went out. So I didn't feel so bad about the pillowcase after I heard about that. Well, I hope you're hanging on to your last nerve. This particular story is the bottom of the barrel. It is just the most, you talk about predatory lending, this is predatory fundraising from the Christian right, and it just floored me when I read this article. Do you remember we talked about Ken Hutcherson? Ken Hutcherson is the Seattle, Washington area based member and founder of Watchmen on the Walls. We've talked extensively and even played audio about Watchmen on the Walls here, an anti-LGBT group, which claims that it was the gay folks that caused the Holocaust, and that it was actually we who were manning the gas chambers, and it was all a big gay plot. That's in a book by another one of these Watchmen on the Wall guys named, forgot his name, short name. But anyway, the book is called The Pink Triangle. We talked about the fact that there's another, well, this was in Latvia, the large anti-gay speech over in Latvia. They're building up a huge core of folks from that part of the planet. Many of them, for whatever reason, are moving to Sacramento. There was recently a vicious murder in Sacramento. One of the other founders of Watchmen on the Walls has a church, if you could call it that, in Sacramento. And they murdered a gay man while he was in the park in broad daylight, and claimed, never mind what they claimed. We've talked about that before. And I've also told you about Ken Hutcherson. It was laughable when he walked into the Microsoft stockholders meeting. Do you recall he went into a stockholders meeting, and he's addressing, he's in Redmond, Washington, by the way. Ken Hutcherson Church is in Redmond, Washington, and he's extremely put out by the fact that Microsoft has a LGBT progressive policy within the company and benefits. And in fact, Microsoft even works to support gay rights. We'll talk about that in a minute. But he actually approached Microsoft and told them that he was their worst nightmare in this audio that we ran a while back, that he was a black man and that he had powerful white friends. And I'll save that comment for later, it's you can imagine. But in any case, they are back after Microsoft again. They are attempting to force the company to, quote, stop financing ungodly ventures. Now, this is Ken Hutcherson. His church is called the Antioch Bible Church, and it's Microsoft's hometown. It's in Redmond. And he's claiming, by the way, when he's speaking in Latvia, he claims that he is the government-appointed U.S. representative to speak to them about the threat of homosexuality. This is, of course, untrue, and the government denies this, but that's not what he tells the folks when he's over there. In any case, he is, at this point in time, attempting to create a global group, and he's calling a very powerful group, and it's going to promote traditional family values. And as one of our chatters pointed out earlier this evening, why does every right-wing organization have the word family in it? I couldn't agree with you more. And to restrict marriage between a man and a woman. Now, this is the part that you know, we've got the little blue-haired ladies signing their Social Security checks and mailing them over to the likes of Dobson. That we, this is documented. This is all true. But he has pulled together a group of what he calls influential Christian leaders, and they're creating a new worldwide organization. This is Hutchison. Now, mind you, he speaks grandly, but nonetheless, he is probably the most most outspoken LGBT hater. This organization is going to be called AGN Financial Network. Now, to finance this network, he has asked everyone, everyone who cares about the sanctity of marriage and the family and the people that want to protect the family from these evil LGBT people, what he wants them to do, each family, he wants them to buy 3 shares, just 3, of Microsoft stock. All right. He's telling them to donate 1 of those shares to AGN Financial Networks. Can you believe this? He's telling the people who visit the site that you have the power to change the world, and the site contains tips on how to open a brokerage account, and among the people who are supporting this are Richard Land from the Southern Baptist Convention and Gary Bauer, who's another right-wing pundit. He says, we're not trying to hurt Microsoft or their shareholders. What we're calling for is a boycott of their product. Yeah, that'll work. And we're trying to get Christians to buy their shares. Now, you see, it's it's pitiful. Any initiative like this to change the stock price, it'd be very difficult to influence Microsoft in any direction. Even if it would take 31 million people worldwide, 31 million people to buy 3 shares for them to gain just 1% stake in Microsoft. So you see, this, but of these 31 million people, that would be 31 million shares donated to the AGN Financial Networks. Have you ever heard of a scheme like this before? You've got to admit, it's from the heart of the devil. It's genius. These people would have to spend approximately, about in today's dollars, in today's stock prices, about $104 each to buy those 3 shares. Microsoft has over 9 billion outstanding shares, and of course the largest shareholder is Bill Gates. And he has 858 million shares. Or actually, Bill Gates has 9% of the total capital. And then there's another group called Capital Research, which has 6% of the shares with another number in millions. So it's just amazing to me. So at the shareholders meeting, Hutchison told people that he was gathering, the Microsoft people, he was gathering evangelicals and Catholics and Jews and Muslims to challenge the company, and again, he says, I can work with you or I can be your worst nightmare. I'm a black man with a religious cause and a host of powerful white people behind me. I kid you not. Microsoft's leadership has, of course, publicly supported gay rights legislation and does not discriminate on sexual orientation issues within the company. In fact, Microsoft is one of the first companies to offer employee benefits to same-sex domestic partners. And there's even a group called GLEAM, G-L-E-A-M, within Microsoft. It stands for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Employees at Microsoft. And it was founded back in 93 and has more than 700 members. These things upset Hutchison to the limit. He is incensed by it. Microsoft has also stated that our company policies are well known and that they are supported by 97% of our shareholders, and it's been voted upon at shareholder meetings and conferences. Hutchison is saying that Microsoft can do whatever it wants to do within its four walls. Back to the closet, ye. Back, you evil. Within its four walls, it can do whatever it wants to. Well, isn't that nice that he's offered Microsoft the freedom to do that? But he objects to Microsoft's and many other companies' influence on public policy. He said, that's when I get upset, when Microsoft came down to Olympia. Olympia, by the way, is the capital city of Washington State. He said, I said, wait a minute, what are you doing down here trying to make public your policy, your private policy public? There was a big to-do. Microsoft supported gay rights or laws in the state of Washington. And then there was a big outcry, and so they dropped their support. And then there was another outcry from the LGBT folks, so they went back and resupported it. And in fact, there's been an email recently to company managers saying to take a hard look at their personal commitment to diversity and redouble that effort. Hutchison said, it's not Microsoft's job to influence the public agenda. That should be left to others like me. That's my job. I'm a pastor. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my stars. All right. And here's where the big honesty moment came in. He says, he was asked during an interview, if this initiative for as many people as possible to buy 3 shares of Microsoft and then to turn 1 share over to the AGN organization, he was asked whether that initiative was a ploy to make money for the church. Hutchison answered, absolutely. Doesn't get any more honest than that. Says, we're going to need finances to go after the next company and the next company. Anything you do successfully needs money. He describes himself as a creative, freckle-faced black Philistine. And he often refers to himself as David and Goliath, you know, in the Goliath being the company he's fighting. So he's anointed by God, just so that you'll know. He says, God's going to one day judge us, and I'm going to do anything it takes for him not to judge us on my watch, whatever that means. And he wants AGN Financial's vote to resonate with the Microsoft board. You see, this is his public policy, that he's going to get millions and millions of Microsoft shares, but and then be able to influence the board and tell Microsoft that they need to stop letting those queers walk around in the halls of Microsoft. But in reality, I think we said it would take about 31 million people to buy 3 shares for them to have 1% stake in the company, which is insignificant in terms of Microsoft. Because we're going after the big corporations, we're putting them on notice. Microsoft is the first because we have history. You see, Hutchison is very upset with Little Billy regarding what went on down in Olympia and Microsoft supporting any legislation that supported LGBT folks. Interesting story out of San Francisco. Remember we talked about Bill O'Reilly and the gang of lesbian bikers, Dykes on Bikes, and they were going around stealing young girls. And he ended up having to retract it and all that. Well, guess what? Dykes on Bikes is now a trademark. And this, it had to go as high as the Supreme Court before it was settled. This just amazed me. They've long time sought legal approval for the trademark Dykes on Bikes. And they finally won that legislation when the Supreme Court turned away a lawyer who says the term is offensive to men. Oh, you straight men, you're taking yourself a little bit too seriously, I think. Now, this is a fellow named McDermott, and he has challenged the decision made by the U.S. Patent Office to grant San Francisco Women's Motorcycle Contingent exclusive rights over the commercial use of Dykes on Bikes. And you see, the Dykes on Bikes, they have used that that phrase for 3 decades, and they lead the San Francisco annual Gay Pride Parade, and they're active in fundraising, all this sort of stuff. But this, the attorney says, well, here's how it happened. There was another group who was just talking about putting the name Dykes on Bikes on T-shirts. So the people at Dykes on Bikes decided they'd better go ahead and trademark it so that, you know, other people couldn't put out T-shirts and stuff with Dykes on Bikes. So now the trademark office, initially they rejected the patent or the copyright on it because they said the name was disparaging to lesbians. But they went around, they turned around by January 2006 and approved it because the club submitted evidence to them that activists were trying to reclaim Dykes as a term of pride. And they also pointed out to the trademark office they had approved trademarks for other derogatory terms. For instance, the television show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is trademarked. And so when they realized that they had, in fact, trademarked Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. They went ahead and allowed Dykes on Bikes. So now McDermott comes along. Now, he is a self-described, self-appointed, I might add, men's rights advocate. My God, how many more rights do heterosexual white men need? Give me a break. So that's what he is, and he objected to the trademark for all of you heterosexual white men out there. He was representing you, at least in his mind, a legend in his own mind. He argued that the term was disparaging to men and that it was scandalous and it was immoral. And he said those were grounds for denial of the trademark. He also indicated that it would contradict the widespread documented understanding of the term dyke as a description of a hyper-militant radical lesbian who's hateful toward men. Can't make this stuff up. This is McDermott. He's a particular roach that we haven't talked about before on this show. He said men were illegally excluded from city streets when the Dykes on Bikes were in the parade, which I find that hard to believe. Anyway, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that they dismissed DeMont's case, but DeMont saying that he couldn't show that he would be harmed by the legislation. There was no reasonable basis for a belief that he would be damaged by registering that trademark. And so McDermott's response to that was to quote Justice Scalia. And he quoted Scalia's dissent from 2003. And in 2003, when the ruling that overturned sodomy laws, Scalia said the court has largely signed on to the homosexual agenda. So there you have it from Scalia's lips, and you have it from McDermott, who believes that Scalia is absolutely right. Fear, people, fear. We have signed on to the homosexual agenda. Yes, indeed, we have. We've talked recently about the Pope lecturing the Spanish government over the fact that LGBTs are open and serving in the military and that they can marry. It's not civil unions, it's full marriage. And the Pope took great issue with that and gave them a verbal spanking a few weeks ago. And Spain is showing no signs that they're going to accept what they're calling moral guardianship from anyone. The deputy prime minister said that the church is no longer welcome to impose its morality on this country. And they're saying that the policies regarding LGBTs is supported by the immense majority of the Spanish population, and that everyone in Spain had rights, whether they belong to a religion or not. Isn't that refreshing to hear that from a government official? Socialist Party also added that there's no place for legislation regarding faith, and there are statements from many other appointed and elected officials in the Spanish government. The secretary of the party's federal executive actually referred to the church hierarchy. He said, and their lies, he wanted to remind them that they are lying, and to remind them that lying is a sin. This is all results of the Pope. He said that he said it in front of 150,000 people that family is based on an unbreakable union of a man and a woman and represents the privileged environment. And, oh, they do mean the word privilege, don't they? Where human life is welcomed and protected from beginning to end. And he made other remarks along those lines, and also another fellow from the Spanish government, or rather from the Vatican, a bishop, made some remarks. The government in Spain introduced full gay marriage in 2005, and they don't intend to recall it anytime soon. And in the most unusual story, it's funny, but it's not funny. But you know, you people, you gotta catch on to what's going on. This happened in Dublin. A teenager attacked a woman. He mistook her for a gay man because of her haircut. Now, what happened is a man and his female partner We're walking down the street in Dublin in a crowded area, and this kid mistook them for two gay men because of the woman's hairstyle. I think she had a short hairstyle. So he decided they were two gay men. He started screaming at them, calling them effing gay bastards, and began to beat the hell out of them. There was no permanent harm caused to either one. They both went to the hospital. They were badly bruised and shaken, and the woman was kicked in the stomach and in the back and in the side and then hit in the face. The man was hit in the face also. And this is because this kid thought they were two gay men. So this gender thing, straight people need to watch out too. If you present, if you got a short haircut and you're not wearing your, you better carry a purse because he's going to think you're a gay guy. Just amazing to me how this continues to go on and on and on. I'll never understand it. Never will. Regarding this poem, now there's a poem that was written a while back. Personally, I think the poem is disgusting, and I would never read it on the air for two reasons. One, it's disgusting, and two, it's very, very long. But this particular poem has been it's been controversial for about 30 years now because the fellow who wrote this poem, a man named Dennis Lemon, and this is in the United Kingdom, because he wrote this poem and published it in a newspaper called Gay News, he was found guilty 30 years ago of committing libel against the Christianity. And he was prosecuted for blasphemy. I'm serious. Rather than leave this up to your personal relationship with God, they prosecute. There was a law. They could prosecute people for blasphemy. And apparently that law is still in effect. And apparently, you can find the poem on the internet. I'm not going to bother to tell you how to get there because the poem is, as I say, has very little redeeming value in my estimation. But that's my estimation. You're welcome to search it if you like. But you can find them on the web. But the man was sentenced to 9 months in prison, and he was fined £5,000. And then his newspaper, the Gay News Unlimited, which published it, was fined £1,000. The newspaper is now defunct. And technically, it is still illegal to publish this poem in the United Kingdom. And it's being brought up again because a couple of socialist newspapers are trying to reprint the offending poem as a protest against censorship. And the poem was a fictional, it was a poem about a Roman centurion and a sexual relationship with Jesus after Jesus was crucified. And personally, I think it's in very poor taste, but whatever, it still resulted in a conviction of blasphemy, which I thought if that was, I have a hard time understanding. It's an obscene poem, but nonetheless, it is still against the law in England to publish this poem. That is up for grabs right now, though. The law has not been repealed, and attitudes have changed, but the law has not been repealed. It's like one of our old Jim Crow laws. And Mr. Lemon is now passed away, as his newspaper was sold in 1982. As I told you, it was quite a few years back when this happened. It was England's last prosecution for blasphemy. Amazing story, is it not? Let's see. I wanted to tell you about Charlie Crist. Now, Charlie is the governor of Florida, and surprisingly, he's a Republican governor. Well, maybe that's not surprising, but his behavior is surprising. As I've told you in the past, the legislation regarding putting an anti-gay marriage amendment on the Florida ballot this coming November is a done deal. It will appear on the ballot. Newspapers all over Florida are up in arms about this. So they're calling it a divisive issue and a necessary issue, et cetera, et cetera. And now the governor has come out and made a statement that we should live and let live, and that he is governing from the middle, and that he is telling those who are wanting to put the constitutional amendment that he isn't interested in their cause, and that he has serious business of the state to attend to and not to bother him. Now, of course, Crist is not completely without guilt here. The DNC, or rather the Republican, National Republican, actually funded $300,000 of the petition drive. So it was a Republican trick of which he was a part of the Republican Party. But now that he's governor, he's changed his mind on it. He's talking about Florida's skyrocketing property insurance and the housing market meltdown and that mean-spirited, et cetera, et cetera. So this is signatures are gathered by the Florida Marriage Protection Amendment, and it's overkill. Also, it's going to affect heterosexual couples. You see, in Florida, in fact, I think in a lot of places, elderly heterosexual couples will stay together even if they're not married, because if they were to marry, if their partners have passed, if they were to marry each other, that would ruin their Social Security benefits. So to protect their benefits, they live together. And this would affect that and a number of other things regarding rights in Florida. So the governor has wisely come out and said that he was not interested in it at all and live and let live. So hopefully people will take a cue from the governor and the countless number of newspapers who have come out against this, and every newspaper in Florida, even the Tallahassee Democrat, has come out against this. And by the way, something that just blew me away, remember the name Julian Bond? I know you haven't heard that in 100 years. I hadn't heard it in 100 years. I was surprised that he was still around. But by the way, Julian Bond has signed on to Fairness for All Families campaign, which is here in Florida. And Fairness for All Families is organizing against this amendment. It's going to cost probably $10 million or so of advertising and to get the message out about what this amendment really does. But Julian Bond, of all people, who was a leader in the civil rights movement in the early 50s, and he'd been a longtime national chairman of the NAACP, he has stepped into a leadership role with Fairness for All Families. So this is a very good sign. And he is frontline leader for the NAACP, and he is going to serve as the honorary board member for Fairness for All Families here in Florida. And he is going up against the petition to. He said it could strip away employee benefits, and it's unnecessary. And so there's hope that Florida will follow in this footsteps of Arizona, rather than the other states who have signed on to this legislation. There's already a law against same-sex marriage. There's no point in putting this in the Constitution. Julian Bond says it's divisive and it's harmful and it does not bring people together. It drives them apart. And even the Florida cities that have domestic partnership registries, they're going to have to shut them down, losing health benefits, et cetera, et cetera. It's a sweeping law, and I'm glad to see that. It is encouraging when you see that side of the people, the black community, stepping up to the bat for us, as did so many of us back in the day. I remember marching in parades. I remember crying when Martin Luther King died. I remember all those things, and it's refreshing because, as you well know, the Republican Party is courting the Southern black pastors and stirring up the gay hate, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very encouraging to see black folks from large organizations like this step up to the plate. And Mr. Julian Bond, we thank you. You know, I was telling you earlier in the show that we're going to take a little field trip, and we certainly are. As I explained to you, you know, we hear these dance tracks that we run on the show. They're all great. I wouldn't run them if they weren't. But we hear them out of context. So, actually, we're going to go on a field trip tonight. And one moment. There we go. I have to do that. A little field trip. And we're going to hear the real deal. So gather up your coats and your hats. And off we go to the gay bar across the street. There we go. Don't be scared. We'll only be gone for about 20 minutes. Rumor has it that the world's most dangerous DJ, Larry Sanders, is playing. The date you've been hearing are picked up. Not a fan. Any.
Oh, again over me. And I felt my spirit break. I had lost all of my belief, you see, and realized my mistake. But time will prevail.
she may fade away in your hand, the birth of a new day.
My friends, is Mr. Larry Sanders, in fact, showing us how it is done. As you know, I often refer to Larry as the world's most dangerous DJ, but I have to add another dimension. He's also about the sweetest guy on the whole planet and is rapidly gaining a very high rating in my heart. I think he is a delightful individual, and Larry Sanders rules. What can I tell you? And thank you, Larry, for that. That is taken, actually, from Larry's Energy Transfer 2 CD, and they are continuous mixes as they would have been played at Fire Island there at the Sandpiper. And all of these mixes and tracks that I mentioned are from Larry Sanders are available at MorningstarMusic.com, and funds that are sent in for him to ship these to you are donated to children's charities, and so you can do two good things at one time. You can hear music from the world's most dangerous DJ, who's also the sweetest guy on the planet, and help support kids. Who could ask for more? You know, I almost hate to tell you the next story after such. You know, my heart bursts with pride, really, after hearing, a track on a set like that. I wonder at some of the fundamentalists who are so intent on describing us as evil and depraved children. Lesbians riding around the backs of motorcycles, stealing little girls, and men in trench coats snatching little boys away from the schoolyard. You know, I would love to see one of them walk into a club where Larry Sanders is playing, and they look at each other, and Marge, I always thought these people were evil. This stuff sounds uplifted. And Marge would say, well, Earl, it does sound that way, but I'm sure they've got subliminal stuff in there. It's probably saying, come to Satan underneath. I just know that's mixed in there somewhere. But, you know, if these people actually knew us, if they knew the music we listened to, the joys in our hearts, the pain and the common suffering we've all been through together, things would change very quickly. It is only the people that we don't know that we were afraid of. And it's a damn shame. Anyway, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Thank you, Larry. A church has been refused property insurance. No insurance for you. The reason? It is a gay-friendly church. They have been refused insurance coverage because they are gay-friendly. And it is a Protestant church, and they've been deemed too risky for property insurance because of the denomination's support for gay rights. Now, this is the West Adrian United Church of Christ. This is a church that has been founded since 1836. Now, it was turned down for property coverage by Brotherhood Mutual Insurance Company of Fort Wayne. You see, the national governing body of United Church of Christ approved gay marriage and the ordination of gay folks. Now, the underwriter, her name is Marcy. She's the regional underwriter for Brotherhood Mutual. It's one of America's largest insurers of religious institutions. She wrote a letter to the church last summer. She says, based on national media reports, controversy, and stances like the ones that your church has indicated in your application have resulted in property damage and potential for increased litigation among other churches who have chosen publicly to endorse these positions. So you see, this church has never suffered any property damage because the main church body has approved a homosexual marriage and a gay marriage and also ordination of LGBT folks. You see, churches and the other policyholders have sometimes had their coverage revoked in the past because there were specific acts of violence against the property that were related to social issues, etc. For example, some churches in the South had their insurance canceled after a wave of arsons in the mid-1990s. Now, this is according to the Insurance Information Institute. And many of those incidents, of course, were in predominantly black churches in the South, and so they got their insurance canceled. But the West Adrian United Church of Christ has got to be the only institution that's been denied coverage because an insurance company fears a destructive backlash against its pro-LGBT stance rather than an aftermath or an after-the-incident revocation. Now, the reverend at the church, his name is Reverend John Cottle, has told the Wall Street Journal that he knows of no acts or violence or threats against his church. The congregation has about 200 members, and, of course, the parent organization is the United Church of Christ. Mr. Cottle said he filled out a questionnaire from Brotherhood Mutual in hopes of getting a better rate, insurance rate, for his church. Right now, the church is insured by Safeco, and he has been denied. The church is in it's between Ann Arbor and Toledo, and it's been insured for years by Safeco. The spokesperson who we quoted earlier says that every insurance company is in the business of assessing risk. Some insurance companies will take a risk, and other insurance companies may not want to take that risk. Now, she didn't have any examples of violence attributable to a church's support for gay clergy or same-sex marriage, but nonetheless, that is on their mind. They also pointed out that congregations have split over this issue and that could result in litigation regarding property. So the insurance regulators, by the way, in Michigan and Indiana are saying the company was within the law when it made these decisions. It's an interesting point here. Of the 5,700 United Churches of Christ, only 700 have publicly stated that they are open and affirming of LGBT and trans people. Now, West Adrian, the church that is being refused insurance, is not one of them. This church has never spoken about being affirmative of LGBT folks. Only the national body, so they're refusing insurance. As far as we know, it's the first time that any one of our churches, any church in the United Church of Christ, has been denied insurance because of their denomination's affirmation of gay and lesbian people. So what do you bet this insurance company is a wholly owned subsidiary of some rich Republican? Wouldn't surprise me in the least. You know, insurance companies, I've got to tell you, in Florida, you know, I mentioned Governor Crist earlier, and he said he's facing real problems and not these imaginary problems of putting an amendment for gay marriage. You know, in Florida, if you live on the coast, you can be denied insurance just like that. You know, brand new homes, you can't get them financed because nobody will insure them. You can't insure them because of global warming, and here comes the hurricanes knocking them all down. So, and in fact, insurance rates for homeowners throughout Florida have gone through the roof. Now, I assume this is also happening in states like North Carolina, South Carolina, Louisiana, other states, of course, that have been hard hit by hurricanes. But this is the first case that we know of a church being LGBT-friendly. You know, it's not that they burn the churches down. They kill the members, maybe. Lord, what can I say? These people. This is exactly what we need. That's said with heavy sarcasm. Exactly what we need. There's a group that's attempting to bridge the gap between those struggling with same-sex feelings and the church. Exodus is marketing itself to over 1,000 churches. They want 10,000 churches to sign on to. I'll tell you more about that tomorrow evening because it is getting near to the end of the program. I need to tell you that I will continue on for the next hour. I will be joining Bob Kincaid, and I will be joining our dear friend John Fox, who is in Australia, for the Horn Section. The Horn Section is a roundtable kind of an event where the hosts chat about current issues. It's completely unscripted. When the show starts, we have absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about. We just depend on God and the microphones. That's all I can tell you. Let's see what else that I want to tell you. Yes, we'll be back tomorrow night. The back says fine. I can do a show tomorrow night. And so there will be another Strictly Confidential with more wonderful music and callers and guests. So there's not a guest lined up for tomorrow evening at this point, but you know how that goes. There was no guest set up for this evening till this afternoon about 3. Things change fast here in the dirt road in the rural South. My thanks to Lynn Rivera and to Larry Sanders of MorningstarMelody.com, and my thanks to all of you for patiently waiting for the old guy's back to get better. I love each and every one of you, and thank you for joining the show. So, in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.
The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Hey, welcome. This is the Horn Section.